An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download it Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind Around, the post-New Day anniversary edition of Rewind to Raw. How are you, Way?
Oh, man. Shaking. After that. Wow.
What a what an anniversary it was.
Yep.
Anniversaries never go well.
I mean, you know, like we've been doing this for more than 10 years. I don't think our 10th anniversary was like that. That's why you always work in pairs, okay? Three's a crowd, really.
That's it. That's always the cutoff. It's the third man. You want to be avoiding that. Well, we will talk about the New Day. We will talk about a commercial-free 40 minutes of Raw to start this show. Way, I nearly missed this show. I was putting my daughter to bed, and I'm lying there with her as she's going to sleep, and then, dude, I passed out, and I woke up, and it was like,
oh my,
it was pretty late. I was like, oh Christ, it's what day is it? It's Monday. I need to be working right now, and I raced down, and of course, it was like not just 30 minutes of commercial. They gave you 40 minutes commercial free, and you know that's why you do speed up, and you have certain functions that you and I we know the tricks of the trade to catch up, and thus, I'm all set to go.
I'm surprised that hasn't happened before.
I am too, yeah. Because I usually put my daughter to sleep and I'm exhausted, but this is the first time I totally fell asleep.
Oh, goodness. Well, you're here. You made it. Thank you
I'm
very here. Much.
I'm awake. I actually have more energy now. I got like a solid half hour of sleep during Raw. That's the key. Sleep during Raw, not before.
It might come down to that when the show goes back to 3 hours. Enjoy it while you can.
All right. All is well in your world, I assume. A good weekend, good Monday.
Overall fine. Not much to complain about, honestly. I'm good.
Well, yeah. let's give you some time. I'm sure you'll find things to complain about over the next hour or so.
Okay.
But before, we're going to give you plenty to cheer about because it's December. The Post Wrestling Cafe is bursting at the seams with plenty of content coming your way this month, and we want to just take a few minutes just to talk about some of the highlights this month, headlined by the best and worst of 2024 show, which will be exclusive to Post Wrestling Cafe members, coming out at the end of the month, as Way and I will welcome in Braden Harrington and Davey Portman, and we will go through the best and the worst that 2024 had to offer us.
Yeah, usually we do this on the free feed. This year, we are putting it on both ours and Poison Rana's Patreon. So for those of you who are patrons of either of our Patreons, you will get this in your inboxes. And those of you who aren't, I mean, consider signing up. It's always one of our favorite shows of the entire year.
And also this month, two editions of Rewind Away. A week from Thursday, we're chatting Knock at the Cabin, the horror film directed by M. Night Shyamalan with Dave Bautista in a role that has been a critically acclaimed one of Big Dave, and we are going to determine if this is, in fact, Batista's best acting performance to date, as some might say. You've really talked up this movie, Way, and Rotten Tomatoes gives us a 67% score, so I don't know if this is the highest of bars, but we will see if this clears the Dave Bautista acting pedigree.
Well, I never said it was his best movie. I said it was his personal best acting performance, of which I think several people might agree.
The kid from Harry Potter's in this, so I'm intrigued.
I didn't know you're such a pothead.
I'm not. But
no.
through osmosis, I have become one. But oh, yes,
okay.
That is going to be our movie review of the month. And then we're going to take a departure from films and head to the Tokyo Dome in July of 2004, where Pro Wrestling Noah said, "We need a bigger venue for Kenta Kobashi and Jun Akiyama." Yes, it is going to be June in July as we chat Noah's departure event, a classic, classic match between Kenta Kobashi and Jun Akiyama. Whether you watched it with Japanese commentary or in English commentary, even if you produced the English companion, such as Wei Ting did.
I did, yeah. Produced the English commentary version of this for the Fight Network with Mauro Ranallo and Dan Labransky. So, I mean, I've seen the match. I don't think I've seen it in Japanese commentary. Maybe I'll watch it in, that way this time.
Yes, this match had such an impact on Wei Ting that he ripped this and put it onto his own personal YouTube channel.
Okay. Well, I actually did that for Mauro. He actually asked me to do that because he wanted, I guess, a demo for... This was even before Access, so I think he wanted it for that. So there you go. Watch the match that got him the job.
Watch
at
Mauro's
Access.
Demo reel. Okay, that's what we're going to review. But plenty of great stuff on this card. That's coming up later this month. We will also have reviews of ROH's final battle with Kate from Montreal and John Cena. We're going to have a Strong Style Evolved review from Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord. Weekly Friday nights, we're here every Friday with Rewind to SmackDown, Collision Course on Saturday nights. And also this Thursday, we have Talk, our final talk of 2024. As the description shows you, a show about anything but wrestling. We will kind of do our look back, the year that was, running the post-wrestling site, and whatever else comes up in our hour or so conversation that we have.
We never ever have plans for a talk. We literally just like sit down in person with each other and we just turn the mics on and then like whatever comes out. So it's one of your guys' favorite podcasts of ours and certainly one of our favorites to do because we don't have to do any prep at all.
So if you are so inclined, you sign up at postwrestlingcafe.com, put your $6 down, and then you get a month and you can check out all of these shows, extra shows we do, bonus shows. You also get ad-free editions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. You get access to the archives going back to 2017. Plenty of great perks, and you're helping to support Post Wrestling. So give it a try. It's a really packed month, and that will continue into January. We're going to have lots of announcements coming up toward the end of December that will be going into effect in the new year, and there's going to be quite a lot. If you can look at the calendar for that first week to 10 days of January, it's really loaded. So we are already planning ahead for what we are going to be putting out that first bit of 2025.
We also now offer gift memberships. So if you know somebody who would appreciate access to the Post Wrestling Cafe, you can go to postwrestling.com/gift. A perfect way to maybe make your special someone's day. Month, I should say.
Their year, honestly. You could do way worse than a gift to the Post Wrestling Cafe. So once again, postwrestlingcafe.com. And now we are going to talk about injuries. We're going to do a roundup of all the injuries and health updates. So coming out of the Survivor Series, broken by WWE's own Jey Uso, Jimmy Uso broke his toe. This was revealed by Jey on the post show, believed to be the splash off of the top. The other person in the men's match to execute a splash off the top was Bronson Reed, who acknowledged as such that he likely suffered an injury. Fightful's Corey Brennan reporting that it could be one or both of his ankles. He was scheduled to get them checked out today. Obviously, Bronson Reed was not on Raw tonight, so we will see. Paul Levesque did indicate he was hurt afterwards at the press conference, could be out for several weeks. I mean, when you look at the dynamics of that particular maneuver,
when you look at the replays, if you watch closely, especially from some of those fan cam angles, you quickly realize, the point of impact, ankles aren't really supposed to bend that way.
And the timing of the save by Punk on Reigns, like the way they did that, it could have looked so hokey just to be safe rather than sorry. And God, I thought they nailed that so well.
Yeah.
I
mean, well, credit to Reigns, too, for
all of them. Timing. I mean, they pulled that one off, and it looked It looks spectacular live and in the replays just as much. That, like, that's going to be an all-time highlight reel for Bronson Reed, right along with leaping onto a car with his tsunami. I mean, that was pretty spectacular as well. So those were the WWE injuries. And then I had heard word about this over the weekend, but it's since come out, Fightful noting that at WrestleCade over the weekend, Juice Robinson was seen on crutches. And this would have been after his match with Will Ospreay that was taped on Wednesday for Collision that aired on Saturday in the Continental Classic, the site stating that his left ankle was wrapped. Now, this one, I guess we will see. If it was notable that on Saturday when they were listing off all the next series of matches in the Continental Classic, they did not mention anything for Juice Robinson. And this is one of those factors where, in theory, your whole tournament is booked out, so an injury can wreak havoc on that. They could certainly insert an alternate if they had to, but this is one of those issues that we always talk about during G1, that an injury can be really difficult, and we'll see what the extent of this injury was, but he was spotted over the weekend on crutches.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's a test of this function of the Continental Classic. You know, certainly in G1s we've had buys for all the people that are currently in the tournament. What will Tony do? Let's find out. We'll see. Very unfortunate for Juice.
And then some health notes. Maria Kanellis, she posted an update today. Of course, she had had a tumor removed back in October, and she found out that it was benign, and it was this very rare tumor that she stated is only found in about 3 to 8 people per million. And because we have a resident medical expert on the post-wrestling forum, Alex Patel actually has his own analysis of this as well. So if you want to check that out at the forum, it's in the comments under this story. But all the best to Maria Kanellis and family. Great news for them to hear. And also want to send our best to Kevin Nash, who has torn his biceps and is going to need surgery. He stated it's going to be a 6-week recovery, but it's going to push back his next stem cell treatment. So, I mean, this guy is just going for numerous health upgrades. But yeah, torn biceps, that sucks for him. This guy had thought at first that it wasn't a tear. Like, they went through, scanned like his biceps, they're like, there's no tear, but he's got so much stuff already in his arm from other procedures that they just couldn't get, I guess, a great read out of it. And then when he found out that it was in fact torn, he just watched every YouTube video he could find about recovering, and he will have to go for surgery. So an unfortunate injury.
And this was announced on the body of the show, so there's always a chance that it was a work, but they did, in a segment during the interview with Braun Breaker, announced that Sheamus suffered a cracked rib at Survivor Series.
Yeah, this was mentioned on the broadcast, and I guess we will wait and see, because it certainly does fit into the storyline that here. Mm-hmm. Kaiser, like, legitimately did break his ribs, and that was the story. He was coming back to injure Sheamus's ribs. And I mean, it could be legit and they're just playing off of this, but you also had the whole, like, the match was built around this guy taking the shillelagh to the ribs and the spear as well. So, I mean, this one could be storyline too, but he wasn't on the show. So we will see. Regardless, they will run with that story with Ludwig Kaiser. So there you go. A whole roundup of what is going on. For the second week in a row, we are going to talk about the Nikki and Bree show, which I ended up just by chance last week when we had the Danielson interview. Like, I have to subscribe to the podcast in my podcatcher to
listen
to it.
Oh, you had to. You don't have to, you know, give excuses.
No, literally my thing, it does not allow me to play it until I add the podcast to my feed. So I didn't delete it last week. So this morning I woke up and it was like, well, this is a newsworthy one too, because Nikki was back. She has been off since the entire incident that went down with Artem back at the last week of August, and she's on for about a half hour with her sister and kind of going over things. Did you get a chance to listen to this way?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. She was, I mean, I think she understood that, you know, we had a very public relationship and I'm a public figure. I do need to comment on this. It sounded like she is not in any hurry to talk about this anymore. And she did not go into any of the specifics. But to catch people up to speed, their divorce was recently just finalized. And it was getting very ugly with both filing for restraining orders. Those have both been dropped. They have co-custody of their child, Mateo. And a lot of it was just how she has reacted to this and the fact that she that their marriage had been not going well for a long time. But she put on a more positive spin publicly. And it was interesting. She noted the fact that she also did not want to have a second public relationship, which is probably an aspect that you don't give as much credence to. A lot of these relationships that are public ones
she didn't want to have a second failed public
relationship, and just compounding that without even getting into all of the details here. But you know, it sounded as though she they have a great relationship today, but is hopeful in the future. wouldn't even describe him by name either on the show.
Well, just considering the allegations, I mean, I would say, like, from both of them, you know, to say they don't have a good relationship, I think would be very much an understatement. You know, there's a lot of
was a lot more complimentary than maybe you would have thought in all of this. Like, she was in a place where I hope we're in a place one day where we can be friends and for the sake of our child and that he has a great life. But also, I think, like, she disconnected herself from all the coverage of the story and in relation to, like, lies that were put out there. I mean, this, you know, she has a concern about, you know, her child will grow up and her child is going to read about all these details sometime, unfortunately. Like, that is a reality of just technology. And the fact is, like, he will come across all of this.
Yeah, divorces are always, always, always ugly. Most people who go through them don't have to go through them in the public, you know, but, you know, this is sort of the life that they live, you know, starting with the reality show. The sort of birth of this relationship was fostered by the reality show. They did a special on the wedding. So it's just kind of the life they've chosen. And I think she probably felt the need to, you know, like, be as honest as possible with her audience. I think it's part of the reason why I'm so drawn to the Bellas content is because of their very raw and honest relationships that they seem to have with their audience. And this was one of those podcasts where, like, I think getting to anything legal, like, you really kind of got the honest feelings of somebody who had just recently gone through a really terrible, very public divorce battle.
And her mother. Basically at the same time.
Yeah. And she didn't even mention, you know, her mother. Like, that's something that I don't think they're willing to touch at all. But with Nikki, I mean, obviously she could speak a lot more about her own personal experience. But, you know, you just, whatever the truth may be, you feel bad for everybody involved, especially the child. So it sounds like she's become a lot more religious, you know, in this time as well. So I hope, well, first of all, I hope justice is served. And secondly, I hope, their little child grows up without maybe too much stress from all of this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they did not proceed with charges against Artem, and they settled the divorce. So it's like it's pretty much over now. Like, they have agreed to joint custody of the child, and that seems to be where.
But their public images are like, both of them are still, I think, very much tarnished, you know, as a result of, like, allegations coming off of this. And who knows, like, if that'll ever, like, how could you ever even resolve that, you know, especially for him? I don't see him ever getting back on Dancing with the Stars after something like this, or really, like, I don't know what he does after something like this. So there's probably the wounds are deep. And I hope for the best for the both of them and their child.
Another story I wanted to talk about was, he would be a central figure on tonight's Raw, Big E, and he got the Players Tribune treatment on Monday with this really long feature that he wrote. And if you get a chance, like, it is a lengthy read, but I really recommend people check this out, as you got to see pretty much describe his whole an upbringing where he was very conscientious about his body image and feeling as the thoughts of suicide and massive depression that would become a big factor in his life into university, where he was playing football and luckily finding treatment and being able to be recommended towards therapy and being diagnosed with major depression with psychotic episodes. And he went into a lot of detail about his struggles and where sports came into play, where coaches helped him out. And I knew he had dealt with injuries in his football career that derailed it, but he tore his ACL right after he got his scholarship to play at the University of Iowa. So that's a year he misses, comes back and tears the other ACL, which is, we know it happened with Chris Sabin. We know that happened with Tegan Knox. I mean, it does happen, but it's the mental of that is just insane. And then he plays his sophomore year, and after that he tears his pec, and then he breaks his patella. And at this point, it was just his football career was done at this point, and he was allowed to, they allowed him on his scholarship to at least he could graduate and still go to the university. But he talked about how he gets into WWE, and then a lot of it is on the formation of the New Day and where he was in his career. He goes to FCW in 2009, and then he's called up to the main roster in 2012 while he is still Biggie Langston with AJ Lee and Dolph Ziggler. But he kind of glosses over that part. He did some things. He won the IC title. He had some matches with John Cena, but he had not connected in a way that makes a top guy. And kind of felt like him and this was brought up in the promo tonight, him and Xavier Woods, who he had met in developmental, they're on the main roster, and both felt they were on the bubble. We might get cut. We need to do something. And it was kind of just letting go with his promo style that he was able to kind of craft a personality that was inside of him that really was not showcased.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was an incredibly effective piece of writing and affecting piece of writing. You know, you look at a guy like Big E, you wouldn't think that somebody who looked like that would have any sort of self-image issues, who doesn't want to, look like, a world champion level professional wrestler, right? But clearly, perhaps body image issues affect anybody, no matter how you look, no matter how you're born, no matter, you could be the most attractive person in the world. You could still very much suffer from those things. So I thought it was incredibly raw and honest to hear him say that. I thought it was also it was very cool to read his process of being a black person in the wrestling industry and how when you're trying to pitch a character for yourself as a black person, you kind of have to fit into somebody else's idea of what a black person should be. And that gives you very limited options and very limited choices. And that's when we're talking about the New Day, I think why the New Day is so groundbreaking. They are a group of black men who don't just have to play black stereotypes. They were allowed, or at least they allowed themselves, once they got over enough, to be themselves, to be these, anime nerds or video game nerds or Cheerio nerds or whatever you want to call it. I don't know if that's appreciated as much as maybe it should be.
Yeah, I thought that was the most fascinating. Well, there's a lot of fascinating aspects to this piece, but in terms of kind of their contributions with the New Day, he spoke that that pro wrestling's appeal is its universality. Good versus evil, classic storytelling, a universal language, and that's very true. But the downside of universality can be oversimplicity. Characters that are based on stereotypes or painted with a broad brush or put into a limited number of boxes. And you can see that downside in how the industry has treated black wrestlers over the years. They've often been cast as brutish thugs or as smiley, unthreatening types. They've often been presented as angry or unintelligent or both. And they've often been underpushed, i.e. not gotten the opportunities they've deserved. When the New Day debuted debuted, The Rock was the only black man to ever who had ever been WWE champion. And he goes on to state that Xavier Woods' initial idea for the New Day was to reboot the Nation of Domination, the Attitude Era group that The Rock got his start in. The Nation was a faction of black militants, and while it had a lot of cool moments, Woods, Kofi, and I are not militants. But I think that just tells you what it's been like at times to be a young black wrestler trying to make it. You pitch based on what you feel will get you on TV, and what you feel will get you on TV is probably what's gotten on TV before. And what's gotten on TV before is a very narrow definition of blackness. And I thought that was so interesting to hear, in that they realized that, like, the sometimes trying to have something that is progressive and that is, for lack of a better term, groundbreaking, that's not the easiest route to just success. And a lot of it is just going to what is tried and true, and what those that are in those creative positions and that are signing off on this, like, what is in their wheelhouse, what is in their comfort level of characters, and how is a Vince McMahon, or name your creative person, going to understand three young black men that are generations apart from Vince McMahon, and how you have to appeal to that kind of a mindset. And I'm sure that even that exists today for, you know, performers that, yes, it is, I think, a more diverse WWE, but it is still one that you do have someone like Paul Levesque, who is going to have, you know, his own experiences, and what his understanding is going to be very different from his talent. But it does seem that there is more of a receptiveness now to different ideas, different presentations, and even the comfort level in a Big E that can talk about this publicly, that maybe you would be more gun shy in another era of even speaking up about this if you're still under contract with this company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's because of the precedent that acts like the New Day have set. You know, now they've proven that you could be successful, and greatly successful, and commercially successful by, I don't know, not necessarily playing like a stereotype that's associated with your skin color. But I mean, it does give you a glimpse into, like, just even, I think, the predicament that talents themselves, that the talents find themselves in even, like, creating characters. You know, how do I fit myself into a box is a question that I'm sure everybody has to ask at some point.
It's a great piece. So take the time to read it. And it did set the table for tonight's angle, because I think if you read this, I think it just added more to this whole New Day segment tonight and the relationship between these three. Some updates on the World Tag League. It is winding down. I know everyone is religiously checking their brackets day by day of how the World Tag League is shaking out. In the A block, it is down to Hirooki Goto and Yoshihashi, Shingo Takagi and Yota Tsuji, and Sonata and Gabe Kidd, who are all tied with 8 points. The final A block matches go down on Thursday, and the key match will be Sonata and Kidd taking on Goto and Yoshihashi, and Takagi and Tsuji will face Shota Umino and Tomoaki Honma. So Umino and Honma can play spoilers in that match, and it's going to be one of those three teams advancing to Sunday's final. The B block, there are two matches left in the round robin portion for each team. The key teams that are still alive: your tag team champions Hanare and Okan with 8 points, Evil and Ren Narita with 8 points, Oleg Bolton and Toru Yano are still alive with 6, and then Tetsuya Naito and Hiromu Takahashi with 6 points as well. And obviously a lot of attention on Tetsuya Naito, who has yet to claim a spot on either the January 4th or 5th shows, and you would figure he will be primed for something of significance for those shows. Big World Tag League way. It's coming down to the wire this Sunday.
All right.
I do not sense a whole lot of momentum for the World Tag League, but that is what is going on. The finals are on Sunday. Dynamite ratings. Man, Thanksgiving. We had to wait all the way until Monday for the Thanksgiving Eve edition of Dynamite numbers, and they were not pretty. 536,000 viewers and a 0.15 in the demo. Now, it is worth noting it was live coast to coast, so there is an accountability for a certain portion of this because of the West Coast viewership that was naturally going to be down with this. However, viewership was down 16% this week. The 18 to 49 number dropped 24% and is the lowest 18 to 49 audience ever for an episode of Dynamite in its regular time slot. And like we have had now, this is the fifth year in a row it is aired on Thanksgiving Eve. So it did still finish fourth in primetime on cable. So it was still among the more watched programs on cable that night, beneath the NBA, college basketball, and Fox News. But to do the ever-so year-over-year comparison to Thanksgiving Eve of 2023, this year they were down 37% in viewership, 39% in 18 to 49, and a staggering 55% drop in 18 to 34. That is, yes, cable is down. It is down nowhere to the level of these numbers, and that's a continual trend that you do see here. But I mean, it is it was a bad number, and you can see even the pattern throughout the night. They had their big first quarter, and then it settled in, and your lowest quarter was the main event as well, not by a huge amount, but it is not as though there was like some spark for the main event either. And it's just a broken record about, you know, kind of where the trends are. And this is one where I think you look at these numbers and they should be instructive of kind of where things are. You don't panic over 1 week, but we're not talking about 1 week. We are talking about, I think, a much longer pattern of where this product is now. And you can rely on the fact that it is still ranking very nicely, but there is a definite trend to this that you do want to address. And I would not be just relying on the fact that we've got a 3-year deal and ignoring this. I don't think you ignore this level of decline, even for a holiday week like this.
Should declines be expected from this point on with the simulcast on Max?
I mean, we're going to see it. If numbers are down like a relative percentage, I think you could attribute it that there are going to be cable viewers that have access to Max that are going to be watching it. I don't know what kind of I'm very skeptical of a lot of these streaming figures that we're going to be getting. That seems to be the new wave of all of this and how accurate they will be. But there is like a logical understanding that your cable numbers are going to be affected by an alternate streaming service that is going to have it. Now, if your numbers, like if we look in March and Dynamite's down like 40% from November, I wouldn't account all of that for Max viewing, but it is some cushion if we see some relative drop off in January when it goes to the simulcast version. And then finally, on NXT Tuesday night, we have got Eric Bischoff and Sean Waltman appearing. So that should be fun. The last chance 4-way to get into the Iron Survivor Challenge: Eddie Thorpe, Cedric Alexander, Axiom, and Lexus King. And then the women's 4-way: Kalani Jordan, Jada Parker, Cora Jade, and Ren Sinclair. A tag team battle royal to determine who will challenge Frazier and Axiom at WWE Deadline on Sunday. Is it Sunday or Saturday night? And then Nikita Lyons taking on Carmen Petrovich on Tuesday night. And Dynamite Wednesday has the Dynamite Dozen Battle Royal. Thus far, they have announced Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Lance Archer, Brian Cage, Commander, and Mark Davis. And then the winner should be, I believe, is facing MJF the next week at Winter is Coming. So MJF versus Commander, what are the chances?
Pretty low.
Okay. Yeah. In the Blue League, Shelton Benjamin takes on Kyle Fletcher. In the Gold League, Claudio takes on Brody King. And then Jay White versus Pac and Swerve Strickland versus Max Caster from Fishers, Indiana.
Okay. Fishers.
Fishers.
I don't know if I've heard of Fishers.
New market for them. So
cool.
This is opening up new doors in Indiana.
Fishers.
All of your news can be found at postwrestling.com. And again, we are back on Thursday with a special edition of Talk. And we're doing musical chairs this weekend because John Cena will be doing a review of
Deadline
with Braden Harrington on Saturday. So Collision Course will be handled by Kate from Montreal and Nate Milton. It is Kate and Nate on Saturday night after Collision Course. So what a cavalcade of guest hosts we have coming up this weekend. So you can check all of that out. And I will be up on Sunday morning with Eric Marcotte chatting UFC 310 featuring Alexandra Pantoja against Kai Asakura and Shavkat Rakhmonov versus Ian Machado Gary. That way has been talking my ear off for the past week. Is Shavkat, whose O is going to go, Gary or Rakhmonov?
Yes.
An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
On to Raw we go. How about this arena name, Way? The Angel of the Winds Arena.
What brand is that? What is that product?
Angel of the Winds. Yeah. I hope it's a wireless carrier.
Angel of the Winds.
I never know what any of these brands are.
It's a casino.
It's a casino.
Yeah.
It always brings it down a few notches when you find out what it actually is. It just sounds nice. It sounds serene. And it was a very serene feeling for WWE because they promoted the fact this was something like their 63rd sellout that they promoted tonight, 7,900 fans, according to WrestleTix. And to give back to the fans, they're giving you the first half hour commercial free as CM Punk walks into the building with what looks to be a very expensive item coming to WWE shop with his new hoodie and shakes hands with Jey Uso and Sami Zayn before walking out into the arena. And
reluctantly not as friendly with Sammy as he was with Jay. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Which would make a ton of sense later on as Detective Sammy would be on the case.
Yeah. I mean, I do think they are perhaps playing to some of the known history between Sammy and KO with CM Punk, you know, as for people who might have watched some of these online exclusives, they did a reaction video to like the War Games babyface team from last year reacting to CM Punk's appearance. And even in something like that, you had Sammy describe his feeling of seeing CM Punk back and how he didn't know how he felt about it necessarily because there was some ice between the two of them, stemming from, I guess, like, you know, including Kevin Owens and some things that might have been said publicly. So whether or not that was in character at that point, I mean, whatever, but they're using it to, I think, some of this storyline here.
Well, before we get into our commercial free edition of Raw, we do have to make note of the fact that Roman Reigns stopping CM Punk from entering War Games on Saturday was viewed by over 104 million views and was the most viewed Instagram reel of 2024.
Really? Wow.
That's what they tell me. That's what WWE says.
Like of all Instagram reels or just the WWE?
I imagine of WWE reels. That would be my impression. I doubt this broke the internet to that degree. Is that the most shareable clip? It's like, dude, you got to check out this clip. Like, to me, I would understand the Bronson Reed thing, but I guess a guy putting his arm in front of someone was crazy.
I mean, it's a clip of two of your biggest stars, and I think that's probably more impressive than anything, you know, stunt-related, unless it was with one of the two biggest stars. We might laugh at some of these metrics, but I think they are very good indications of, like, the amount of attention that a Roman versus CM Punk program would get whenever they get to that.
Well, the Instagram views, this was 104 million. Could you have imagined what that handshake between Hogan and Savage would have drawn on Instagram?
Oh, probably quite a bit, yeah.
Punk knows where he is going this time, unlike when he spoke to the people after Hell in a Cell. Said, I handled my business with Drew and then handled some personal business on behalf of my friend Paul Heyman. So in regards to where he is going, he gets onto the turnbuckle and points, but there is no sign. He says, "Everyone told me that there was nothing there, and there are many roads to get there, and now I've got a favor in my pocket." Yes, he has got the idol, and he is telling everyone about it. He doesn't know when he's going to use the idol, but he's got it. Very, very brazen move to inform all of the other contestants that you have this favor.
So we were wondering what the favor from Paul Heyman was, and clearly it's something to do with a WrestleMania match. Now, with CM Punk, again, I think they're playing to some known history with CM Punk's backstory here. We know from the Colt Cabana podcast how much it means to this guy to someday main event WrestleMania. How much it bothers him that he never main evented a WrestleMania.
They should license that clip from the podcast to use. It would be great for the story leading into WrestleMania.
I wonder who owns it. I mean, I guess Colt would still own it right now. Yeah, probably not happening. But it's part of his known story, you know, his known history, like the grudge he holds for never having main evented a WrestleMania. So I think that backstory is the only time I could accept personally CM Punk pointing towards the WrestleMania sign when he's just, you know, talking about something like that. It's also fascinating how he mentioned that there are multiple roads to get to WrestleMania, be it the Rumble or the Elimination Chamber. And he said those lead to dead ends. Is that right, John? Did I get my notes right?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, he said those lead to dead ends, which is fascinating, but it's true. Just because you win the Rumble or the Chamber doesn't mean you're going to main event WrestleMania. You know, like, who won the Chamber last year?
Oh, geez.
Don't put me on. Whatever. Spot. Like, they didn't main event WrestleMania. Cody Rhodes main event at WrestleMania. The Rock and Seth Rollins and Cody and Roman Reigns main evented the night prior. So, I don't know if this was Punk like maybe alluding to the fact that like I could win those things, but that doesn't guarantee me a main event slot at WrestleMania. Whatever I got going on with Paul Heyman would. So what could that be? What could that be?
That's right. Drew McIntyre won the men's one and Becky Lynch won the women's one. So Drew did get his title match and it did not main event WrestleMania.
It did not, no.
So I guess what maybe does Paul Heyman control the match order?
I don't think so.
He might have got the favor from the wrong person.
Yeah. I wonder. I mean, clearly they already have something planned. They might even have. They probably have Punk's main event. Sorry, WrestleMania opponent planned already. Whether or not he actually makes it to the main event, I mean, it's almost irrelevant. This is just the story they're trying to tell, right?
By the way, I thought. A very funny tweet today was Kevin Owens was quote tweeting some fan who believed that Kevin Owens was left off of Survivor Series because of the reaction he would get in Canada. And Owens was pumping up this theory. So he tagged like Triple H, Jimmy Fallon. He was tweeting all these like executives in WWE, including Nick Khan, who is not on Twitter, to the best of my knowledge. So he tagged the strategic director at East Suffolk Council, who has not tweeted in months. But I did find it entertaining that this man was tagged in Kevin Owens' tweets here.
Oh, I'm so sorry for his replies.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It looks like this guy gave up on Twitter a long time ago, which some of us are finally catching up to as the trend. But getting back to this promo, because it was a lengthy one, he is interrupted by Seth Rollins. And Punk shows his disdain, turning his back as Rollins enters the ring. And I could not get over the way this was shot because Punk is backed into the corner with a cameraman literally over this man's shoulder. And I just could have imagined sitting in this crowd. It must have looked so awkward, but they really wanted this intense feel with the camera right hovering on Punk's shoulder as we stared at Seth Rollins cutting him down in his promo from across the ring. The crowd is singing. They're chanting. I mean, this is a lot of buzz here from the, you know, having two big stars in the ring together. Rollins wishes that he knocked Punk's ass out the day he returned to WWE. A lot has gotten in our way. You were hurt. I've been out. And says, "I was this close after Hell in a Cell, but I took pity on you. And that was a mistake. watching you victorious alongside Roman Reigns, it's time to rectify that mistake, because now the only thing between us is air and hatred, and tonight I'm going to knock you on your ass. Punk says, I put personal stuff aside. 6 months ago, you were the champion. Now, you've got nothing, and therefore I have no use for you anymore. He says, I know where I'm going and what my future is, and kid, you ain't it. Rollins says, you've been thinking about me for 6 months. I don't think about you at all. I've got things to do in this business, so stay out of my business. And with that, Seth Rollins comes through on his promise, knocking the man on his ass, shoving him down, and we get a big brawl. And forget the crack staff security. The ultimate security is Sami Zayn and Jey Uso, who are on the scene in seconds, okay? They could have lapped the regular security team that are hired to stop this kind of stuff because they were a good 60 seconds away. So they separate them. Rollins tells them all to go back and run off to Roman, and Zayn takes issue. Not that he spoke to Punk like that, but you don't speak to Jey Uso like that. And he asks Zayn, yeah, well, he's Roman's family. I can understand that. But what's your excuse? You're not family. And Rollins tries to explain that him and Sammy are family because they came up in this business together. These two blood brothers. The Zayn and Rollins alliance that we have seen beaten over our head for the last decade that these two men have been on the main roster together.
There's a little bit of retconning, or at least like exposition here to give to the audience to catch us up on what might have occurred off screen. But I mean, there's a lot about these, you know, wrestlers' relationships we might not know, John.
How many gaps in storylines for today's WWE is just plastered together with ROH. We were in ROH.
Yeah, like pretty much.
That's
yeah.
it. Okay.
That's all you need.
That's fine. So this was really good, though, because Zayn says that he's accused of stabbing Rollins in the back. Zayn explains, I didn't want to team with CM Punk. I wanted to team with you, but you're too stubborn. Rollins wouldn't help Reigns, and he explains, because I don't want that monster to regain his power. Well, Zayn says, Rollins, you created that monster when you attacked him with a chair to the back. The worst chair shot that even a decade later, we are still feeling the effects of. Rollins points out, well, Sammy, you did the exact same thing to him. They've all sacrificed to take down the bloodline. Roman has never changed. He's never even apologized. Punk hasn't changed. And Sammy, you're just gullible and you're being stupid. So Zayn challenges him to a match tonight, and Rollins accepts. And this was the first 25 minutes of Raw, commercial free. It's probably going to do an incredible quarter.
I thought it was excellent. This is the type of like male soap opera shit I love, and I'm not ashamed of saying it. I think the genius of the Bloodline story has been how much it's been able to affect and create new stories out of the rest of the roster, even when the Bloodline are not present. Drew McIntyre, you know, a character born entirely out of the Bloodline. Kevin Owens' current character, born entirely out of the Bloodline. Now we get this lovely interplay between Seth Rollins and basically anybody that's around his orbit. You know, by spending time in the previous weeks reminding us of how much Seth Rollins hates Roman Reigns, they've given us enough justification for him to hate CM Punk even more for joining the team, but now having beef with Sammy for also joining the team. And I thought Sammy and Rollins did such a great job here of, first of all, maybe in a short amount of time, establishing the depth of their relationship with each other, okay? Coming up through the indies, being family through their bonds in, I don't know, the Markham Civic Center and Ted Reeve Arena and all these places they wrestled in. Not really exposed to us prior to this, but it's okay. Like, I it's enough for me to buy. And then I think what I absolutely love the most was the excellent points and counterpoints that they had with each other, referencing parts of each other's history. You know, the type of like canonical reference that really rewards a long-term audience, right? Pointing out the irony of Seth Rollins creating something he now hates so much. And the excellent counterpoint from Roland saying, you did the same thing in the scene that they scripted to mirror the one that I did. So, like, it tells me that, like, if this writing staff that they currently have are people who have good knowledge of their own history, hopefully grew up as fans of at least this current generation. And it really does, like, tell you that they seem to understand the long-term motivations of all of these characters.
Yeah, I was waiting for Sami Zayn to ask Seth about that mini S.H.I.E.L.D. reunion in 2019 before Ambrose left the company.
But that was before the Tribal Chief.
So the issue is not Roman Reigns himself. It's the Tribal Chief version of Roman Reigns.
Well, yeah, all the bad that they've done since.
Okay. Judgment Day, they showed the attack on Damian Priest after Survivor Series, where they attacked him with a chair shot to the injured arm. And so this has effectively taken Damian Priest out because he is not figured into Saturday night's main event, which we will get to, and no Damian Priest on the show either. We go to the clubhouse, and Balor warned Priest, I would be waiting, and Liv points out that they had agreed to stay away from Damian Priest, but then Balor overruled it because Dominic failed to take out Priest. And then Balor tells Liv, you know, if you had listened to me, maybe you guys would have won at War Games. Now you're facing Io Sky at Saturday night's main event, which is our second official match for the show on Long Island. Liv hopes that Balor knows what he's doing, and Finn, whether accidentally or this was plotted out, stumbled upon his new catchphrase, when you listen to Finn, we always win.
I don't think those things are ever accidental.
Okay. It was, it rhymes. Mm-hmm. Finn, win. And then Liv sends Dom to keep an eye on Balor. Yep. There would be a lot of Judgment Day on this particular show and more to come in this whole saga. But yes, we do have a group that is having internal problems. I'm interested to see these problems explored over the next months.
I don't think they'd be getting much airtime if they didn't have problems.
Is there a Judgment Day reunion coming up?
Oh, you got to wait about maybe 7 years, I would say.
Yeah, they're not at a nice round number yet, yeah. Since Edge's creation. Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez versus Io Sky and Kairi Sane. So early on, Sane is getting beaten down, and then Sky gets the tag, and she goes for this slingshot into a sit-out dropkick as Raquel is draped on the middle rope. As Wade described it, not quite sure what Io was going for there, and blames it on the toll that War Games takes on people. I mean, the eternal cover. But then Sky gets sent into the Tree of Woe, stops a Tahana bomb with a head scissors, and then Raquel is sent shoulder first into the post. And after a missile dropkick, Sane hits the insane elbow. Liv makes the save, and then Sky takes out Liv with a dive. And after a series of spinning back fists by Sane, she runs into a big boot and is put down by the Tahana bomb as Raquel pins Kairi Sane. And post-match, we get a further attack when Rhea Ripley runs out, minus the mask, goes for the riptide, and Raquel stops her, and she takes Raquel to the floor, rams her head into the desk, and Liv jumps onto Rhea's back, posts her, and then Raquel throws Rhea orbital first into the corner of the table. Not quite at the velocity that Bron Breakker hit this corner last week, but the idea here being that should have been wearing your mask, Rhea.
You got to watch for those corners on the tables, you know? We put, like, little bumpers on corners of our tables for toddlers for a reason. So anything that could harm a toddler would be great wrestling weaponry.
The same precautions for toddlers extend to Bron Breakker.
Yeah, pretty much. Nice short little match, you know, rehabs the heels a little bit after losing last week. Doesn't do much to heat up this Saturday night's main event match between Io and Liv, but clearly their interest is in making Raquel look strong to build up to this Rhea match for next week.
I'd argue the Rhea-Raquel match is the bigger one coming out of this.
Yeah.
So that is next week in Wichita, Kansas. Kathy Kelly speaks with Gunther, who is approached by Balor and Dominic, and Balor takes credit. This is the second time you have left the match with Damian Priest as WWE champion, and it's because of me, so when is my title shot coming? Gunther says, I owe you nothing. I asked for nothing. I needed this win by myself, and you took that from me. and then asks Dominic why he's looking so confident, and then remembers that he beat Priest, something Balor has not done, and Gunther is going to use his stroke around here to get a match as he goes to Adam Pearce. So this guy doesn't even have to win War Games for favors to be asked and received.
I guess champions get a lot of privilege. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now seeing that Gunther is being paired with Finn, I think those babyface teases for Gunther make a lot of sense. You know, he will be a babyface against Finn Balor in the Judgment Day. So, but whether or not this is like a permanent babyface turn for Gunther, or if it's just sort of a month-long, you know, justification to get him through this match with Balor, remains to be seen. But it's interesting to see Gunther like be able to switch around back and forth this way.
This is the way a lot of like world champions were booked, where you kind of, it's not like he's this 100% heel, 100% babyface. It's sort of like he can go with, like, it just broadens the whole scope of who can go for the championship, because this is a guy that can play either role by, and it's not like you have whiplash from him going from one to the other. Like, you have introduced sort of this insecure Gunther that went up against Damian Priest, but he's also this kick-ass wrestling machine that can degrade his opponents.
Or at least like in the match on Saturday, does not appreciate cheating, does not appreciate somebody fighting his battles for him. So they're not changing the character, but they're emphasizing the points of the character that are noble and that are likable, like his desire to have clean matches, even though I'm pretty sure he's cheated several times in the past with like Ludwig Kaiser, for instance. But now we're supposed to just think of him as like, oh, what a nice guy, doesn't want to cheat. I want to cheer for him.
It's time for another tournament, the Women's Intercontinental Title Tournament, and boy do they love their triple threats, as that is going to be the makeup of the brackets, identical to the U.S. title tournament on SmackDown. So starting things off is Dakota Kai, Shayna Baszler, and Katana Chance, and we'll go over the brackets after the match, but we have, everyone was focused on Rhea Ripley and not donning the mask, but they also noticed Katana Chance without her face mask. She had this thing for months, but she is all... She did not get run into the corner of a table.
She didn't get a cool like goat mask either.
No, she did not. No.
Yeah.
So this was our first commercial break, around 40 minutes in. Chance hits a Frankensteiner to Kai, who lands on Baszler, and then Chance is going for covers on both. And then after another Rana attempt, Baszler blocks it, rolls up Chance, and gets thrown out. Baszler lands a knee strike for a two count, and then Kai lands the scorpion kick onto Baszler and goes for her version of the GTS, talk to you later, and gets caught in the Kirifuda clutch. That's broken by Chance's 450, and then Kai lands the finish to pin Chance in and advances to the second round.
I thought these three had a good, fast-paced match. The crowd sounded very engaged and very lively. I thought all three were able to showcase qualities that made them unique, whether it be Shayna's submission ability, Chance's agility, or Kai. You know, I thought Kai looked great in this match, you know, and I guess she had to if she was moving on and going to wrestle more. But it's nice to see her get at least a little push, you know, throughout this little tournament here.
What happened to Sonya Deville? She not managing Baszler? No, she was just, I thought she'd be in the corner. Isn't that her role? Isn't she the manager?
I guess she took the night off.
Okay, well.
Do you want to go through the brackets?
Yes. So the winner of this, which is Dakota Kai, will take on the winner of next week's match. No, this is not next week's match. So the other side has Zoe Stark, Raquel Rodriguez, and Caden Carter. The other side of the bracket is Lyra Valkyria, Zelina Vega, Ivy Nile, and Elba Fire versus Natalia versus Kairi Sane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anybody stand out to you right now?
No. No one stands out as the obvious winner here.
Yeah, like they haven't really been pushing anybody in this field. Raquel with being the exception, of course, but would they have Raquel win a championship? Sure, I guess, why not? Like, have her be the IC champ while Liv holds the world champion. I could see that happening. Dakota Kai maybe, but I think that might be a bit of a tougher ask. Interesting. I'm expecting Raquel to go on, and Raquel versus Dakota Kai would be a second round, which they have some history there.
Yep. I could see that being that match.
On the other side of the brackets, like Lyra, Zelina, Ivy,
I see Lyra and Natalia being the likely semis, and
sure, no one's really standing out right now. But I mean, they could always like what strap the rocket to, you know, somebody Vega. Capable. Who?
Vega. I mean, could yeah, be Vega. Your outside shot of somebody. I mean, it's.
The point of this tournament is to build your mid card, and clearly there's a lot of building.
This is a mid card. This is a very collection of mid card.
A lot of people talent. Who just don't really have much identity right now. So hopefully these matches can do that for them.
Yeah. No Maxine in this particular one. Mm-hmm. Few others that are omitted. So there you have it. The IC title tournament underway. Then there were highlights of the New Day's 10 years together as Adam Pearce introduces Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods with the ring decorated. I thought for sure they were going to play off of something, because if you could see, they had the photo of Kofi hoisting the title, Big E hoisting the title, and then it's just like a group shot on the right. Like, we don't even have like Xavier Woods King of the Ring victory here, but
they did have the crown on the stage. But yeah,
they did have the crown. The yes, but I thought for the photos would put Xavier over the edge, but not the case. Instead, they come out and Pierce leads a chant of New Day Rocks, and Woods and Kingston, they thank the fans. The fans are chanting for Big E. They know we miss him too. And Woods says, "What we're about to say is not your fault." And
I guess they sound like two parents about to announce a divorce to a child.
Yes, or introduce Gene Snitsky. And before they can tell the children about mommy and daddy are going to live in separate places, Big E's music plays, and out comes Big E. And he says that to see these two argue and bicker troubles his soul. When we started this, we were all we had. Kofi, you were mulling retirement with the passion beaten out of you. Woods and E were close to being fired. You two, on my scariest night of my life, were at my hospital bedside making sure I was okay. Kofi, while I was wearing my neck brace, I held your daughter. And what we've built means something to a lot of people, and it means a lot to me. And until I am medically cleared to return, I'm going to remind you two of who you are, and I'm going to be here every single week as your manager. And I'm sure that there were fans who were like, oh, okay, this is the end. This is how it's all going to culminate. But no, Woods cuts him off, and he says, now you want to come back after watching us argue and fight? And to his point, this has gone on for months.
Yeah,
months. This has not been a 2-week thing. He's like, oh, I've been traveling, I had to prepare my notes for the panel. No, this has been months. Where have you been, Big E? And he says that you left us. And he says, what? I broke my neck. And Kingston's response, and the line that I think will define this segment. Yeah, so what? So what? Steve Austin broke his neck. Kurt Angle broke his neck. They came back, and they didn't even have two family members waiting for them to come back. And the fact is, we put our growth on hold for you. Kingston says, you didn't even need to have neck surgery.
What's the context on that?
He did not actually have to have surgery. They were going to wait to see how he could like rehab this, and like he didn't actually have to go through surgery for it.
But chose to have surgery. Why then?
Who are we talking about? Big E did not have surgery.
Well, he didn't have surgery at all.
No, that's what they're pointing out here, is you did not have neck surgery.
Okay. So he's only rehabbing. All
yes.
Right. Wow. What a great line. What a great heel line.
Woods explains, you broke your neck. I tore my Achilles off the bone. And I was back in 9 months. For you. You chose your new life over us. Your new projects. Your new girlfriend. Woods says, you've become a burden. Because everywhere we go, the people tell us they miss you. Well, obviously, you didn't miss us. And Kofi explains, our philosophy was we before me. But E, you chose yourself over us. Wood says, let's be honest, E, you will never be medically cleared. So get the hell out of this ring and go back to your desk where you belong. And we'll call you if we need you. And Big E is just heartbroken. Is this it? Is this how it's going to end? Really? And Big E leaves the ring, and we are left with Kofi and Woods, who look at one another and acknowledge that it's just the two of us now. And they give each other the Outrunner's seal of approval. And it's a new day for Kofi and Xavier Woods.
Yes, it is. Well, I definitely didn't see that coming. Not this way. You know, I think a lot of us were expecting Big E to play a role here, yes. Or some of us might have even been expecting Big E to unite the New Day, but not like this, you know, not at his expense. It was certainly a bit, they caught people off guard by it, I think, in a big way. It was a very compelling segment and incredibly successful if the intent was to break everybody's hearts, which I think this segment completely achieved. I kind of have to reserve my judgment on this one to see like how I feel about this decision, because as much as I think, as good as I think Big E's performance was in this segment, as also with Kofi and Woods as well, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little disappointed that, I mean, the end result of all of this is just the two of them staying as a tag team. And how far can these two get, you know, in the tag team division versus the potential that I think that we were being teased with the both of them going with their singles runs and possibly having a great feud with each other. I also find it a little bit tough to like completely buy Kofi's change in demeanor. You know, Woods I can buy because over the weeks they've established that he's a guy with like really flawed, asshole-ish logic. Kofi coming out and saying, so what to like Big E's neck break felt a little bit out of character to me in too quick of a moment, but who knows maybe what was motivating him behind the scenes. But what did you think, John?
I thought the performances were great. I thought that if you're looking at the end of this, I mean, you are like the idea of turning the New Day heel. I think you almost had to go to this level with a Big E. Like, if you're going to do this, it's with the idea of giving these two like a whole new direction coming out of this. I think there was the point that they're, especially like with all the neck stuff, like you could see like they wanted to make this feel like this is really, like you wanted to hate Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods for how they were just tearing down Big E. I don't know if there's one person that could buy like that. These three are like, if you can buy that with these three that they are conveying that to you.
Well, could you not have bought it with the Woods Kofi story in the past? Did that stop you from liking that?
I thought that this, it was almost too much with like the severity and significance. It's one thing to say like you're erratic and you just can't pull the trigger and win a world championship. It's quite another to just be so dismissive of this guy's like career ending injury.
They dialed it up too much to the point of like it being farcical.
Yes. Yeah. I almost think like had they not even gone into the next stuff, it actually would have been like, where have you been? And like that's something I think the audience can give a tangible like, OK, that is a question to explore. That said, I'm intrigued to see where this goes with the two of them. A breakup and a feud is obviously where you could have gone. I guess the thing was, when that feud runs its course, are these two better off together or separate? Remains to be seen. Like, would Woods be elevated to such a degree, or, you know, putting this new demeanor on the New Day as heels? I think it's going to be very tough for them to switch to heels, but the work over the last few weeks, I think it gives you a pretty solid idea into they're going to change everything up, and I don't think this is going to be a crowd that's going to fight the reactions like you might have years ago, where I think it'd be much tougher to turn the New Day.
Yeah, and you know what? Just because they're like paired together doesn't necessarily mean they're going to stick as a tag team. They can, you know, be for each other as they go on their singles runs like they have in the past. I'm curious to see what they change up of their presentation and their look. This new series, Xavier Woods, over the past, you know, several months has been just so excellent. You know, one of the best, I think, rebrands and refreshings of a character over the past year. So I'm excited to see how much further they could take it now that both of them are now going to be like assholes. So what do they change about their presentation? What do they change about their music, their look? They can't use Big E's voice now in their intro, can they? No.
Oh, this should be a whole rebranding of the New Day. I think you keep the name. But
they
eat
oatmeal now.
They give up carbs.
Oh, no. Say it ain't so. They're vegans.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. Well, it was quite a segment. It was, I'm curious to hear about what people's feedback are. I don't think that if you were sad at the end of this, that was like the purpose of it. And that was what Big E was utilized to be. And
it made a big splash, which is the intent of all of this, you know, propels the New Day even more into like people's conversations at this point. So my only concern is if they are going to stick in the tag team division, who are they going to feud with? You know, because
the War Raiders,
it takes it down a huge notch, even if it's like against the Judgment Day or something. Right. So I'm curious to see what the follow up is.
Yeah, I think you're also going to have a lot of people coming out of this segment that are going to be have the expectation of a Big E return one day. And I don't know if that's very realistic, but like you totally built this around, you know, Big E having his triumphant moment down the road.
Does he come back as a manager?
He could. He could come back as a manager to go after the New Day or something.
I know the perfect guy. The Big O. He's always comes back to Odyssey.
He was omitted from the 10-year retrospective, unless the shot. Maybe there was a fourth photo in there the 2 weeks.
Yeah, a really tiny one. Yeah.
Okay. Coming up December on the Post Wrestling Cafe, two editions of Rewind Away coming your way, including Dave Bautista starting in the M. Night Shyamalan horror film Knock at the Cabin. Plus, we will review Noah's Departure card from 2004 featuring Kenta Kobashi and Jun Akiyama. Plus, reviews of ROH Final Battle, Strong Style Evolved, and the granddaddy of them all, the best and worst of show for 2024 with Braden Harrington, Davey Portman, Wei Ting, and yours truly. PostWrestlingCafe.com. There was a reaction by Final Testament to the attack. We're getting an 8-man tag next week. Final Testament and The Miz against the Wyatt Six. So it's our quarterly Wyatt Six brawl.
All right. Quarterly, yeah.
Gunther against Dominic Mysterio, non-title. Carlito and JD are sent to the back. And the whole purpose of this match was to convince you that, okay, it's a non-title match. We're going to get some offense for Dom and try to get one near fall. And it was comical to watch Dom deliver his chops and then Gunther respond with his own. He gets the choke applied. Dominic low blows him behind the ref's back, hits a 619 in the gut, hits a regular version, and then the frog splash for a two count. And then Gunther boots him and power bombs Dom to get the victory.
Yeah. This was interesting in that we kind of got to see Dominic play very briefly a babyface here. You know, simply being an undersized person, like doing like frog splashes and things like that, kind of got the crowd on his side. They were chanting "Dirty Dom." So very interesting. He took quite the beating in this match. I mean, I thought entertaining for the time that it existed, and a lot more physical than I expected.
But more focus on the post-match as Valor jumps Gunther and hits him with three coup de grâces as Dominic is told to watch and learn, kid. And then he picks up the belt and tells Dominic, that's how it's done. So Prick Balor is our next contender.
Yeah, they're placing a lot of emphasis on this, you know, relationship between Dom and Finn Balor of Balor kind of like pushing his weight around as a leader, constantly like teasing Dom for disappointing the group, more so than they're even focusing on Balor and Gunther. So it's, I think, very clear that like whatever's going to happen with Balor and Gunther is just a way to further this Dominic and Balor storyline. Now, to what end? What do you think, John? What is the point of teasing this sort of rivalry between Balor and Dom?
I think that we're just going to have more of Dominic as like the underling for Balor. I don't think this is leading to anything between these two. I think it's
not
only
a split.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Yeah, we'll see.
And then it was time for intermission. Kathy Kelly is with Pete Dunne. She nearly calls him Butch. And yes, folks, if you're not up to speed, he doesn't like to be called Butch. Dunne asks, can you please not call me that? Tonight, it's Pete Dunne versus R-Truth. Get that in your head. And the camera operator was so excited that they ran right past him to catch an attack on Jey Uso. And wouldn't you know it, he was attacked and he did not see who the attacker was. One of those phantom attacks. And he's holding his head. He might have amnesia.
Obviously, yeah. Who attacked him?
He's going to wake up and think he's Jimmy.
I guess we now know that the person who attacked him was wearing a hood. You know, it's kind of dark back there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But who was wearing a hoodie coming into Raw tonight as well? His expensive hoodie.
Oh, okay. Well, it wasn't a black hoodie. Okay.
Okay. Pete Dunne and R-Truth. There's no entrance for R-Truth. Wade and Joe Tessitore told us that the crowd was just obliterating Pete Dunne with chants of Butch. I'll take their word for it. I feel no one cared about this. The description of Butch is that he is the face of a pit bull chewing on a bumblebee, as Wade put it. Dunne starts yelling at the fans to stop chanting Butch, and he is rolled up by Truth. Thoughts?
Yeah, man. Pete Dunne getting that name is the worst thing that's ever happened to his career.
I'd say the second worst thing is the idea that this is still funny. Like, the punchline is still, like, we got it. It's so been 6 months of this.
I've kind of said this in the past. I mean, at this point, I feel like you have to blame Dunne for at least a good portion of not giving the writers more than this so that the writers can give him something beyond Butch. You know, like the fact is that he has not been more interesting, unfortunately, throughout this entire main roster run than perhaps the association with this name. And that's really unfortunate. You know, he's a very talented wrestler. We've seen it certainly in NXT. But it just hasn't necessarily come across for whatever reason. And it's awful. I think it sucks. But you know what? Like, it got a good reaction here, you know, especially from the kids. So I think kids love Butch.
He should have joined the Wyatts. I think he would have fit in nicely.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe. They could use a dog.
It's a new name.
Oh, to get a new name. Right, yeah.
Kathy Kelly interviews Bron Breakker. This is where they state that Sheamus has a cracked rib. He says that he was a great challenger. And then Kaiser walks in, says, I nearly won the title, but my goal was accomplished. I broke Sheamus's ribs, and it was a rib for a rib. And there is now nothing stopping me from bringing that title back to where it belongs in Imperium. Braun, also holding some leverage, is going to talk to Adam Pearce. I would love to face you. You will never hold this belt. It was a hell of a match, but you need to leave Gunther's shadow because Gunther's stock is going down.
Mm-hmm.
Quite the jacket here, too, that Kaiser was sporting.
That's nice. Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. Next week, Rhea Ripley against Raquel Rodriguez, Lyra Valkyria versus Zelina Vega versus Ivy Nile, and the 8-man with the Wyatt 6 against Final Testament and The Miz. Zayn stops Adam Pearce, says, what happened to Jay? Who did it? Pearce doesn't know. And Zayn says, I think I know who did it, and I'm about to whip his ass in the ring. And Zayn is on the case. So Pearce then speaks to Finn Balor and tells him, you've got your title shot at Saturday night's main event. And next week, you'll talk about your other title match as we're going to look for a third tag title defense this year from Finn Balor and JD McDonagh.
Yeah, likely the War Raiders, right? Again?
Yes. Is that it? Yes. To which Finn responded, who cares about the War Raiders?
Mm-hmm.
So we have got Cody and Kevin. We have Liv Morgan against Io Sky, and now Gunther against Finn Balor. So it's a 2-hour show. So I don't know how much more. Maybe one more match, and that's going to kind of fill out the show.
I'm sure you'll get talking segments on it as well. Big talking segments. Yeah.
Seth Rollins and Sami Zayn is the main event. After the commercial break, Zayn executes a blue thunder bomb and then sets up for the Huluva kick, but is stopped with a super kick, but rolls to avoid the stomp. Zayn tells Rollins, I know it was you who attacked Jay. And he's slapping him. Rollins runs him into the post. And then Zayn gets a chair to further accuse him. He's going to just beat it out of him. Rollins denies it. He pleads, it wasn't me. I wouldn't do it. Did you ask Punk? Did you ask Punk? And Zayn stops and he thinks about it. He's like, wait a minute, I didn't ask Punk. Maybe he did do it. Seth Rollins summarized it better than I could in my notes by responding, Jesus Christ. And Zayn throws down the chair and literally, it's pretty much verbatim the finish we just had with Pete Dunne and R-Truth, but it's a small package by the distracted fool here in Sami Zayn, who gets rolled up, and Rollins, after pinning him, tells him, Sammy, I love your heart, but you need to start using your head, and leaves him. And if this was the story that the man does not use his head, they certainly booked this guy to look like a fool tonight. I will say they accomplished that goal in my estimation. And with Sammy left there with his back towards the ring, the returning hooded Drew McIntyre is out to lay this poor guy out one last time with a claymore, and Drew McIntyre is back, the presumable attacker himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe he took out Jade Cargill as well. Did anyone theorize that?
No. I think
this is a pattern.
Be the first.
This is a pattern of attacks potentially by this man.
We could see.
Okay. I did not like this main event. I thought you really skirted out on a match, and the story stuff to me was just, it was a little bit too much.
It was a lot more amateur theater than I was expecting, but I also don't hate it for a TV episode. You know, for me, especially on a 2-hour TV show, I think using your wrestling to build to your bigger programs is not a bad thing. In fact, I think it's what you should be doing. So I didn't mind it. You know, it came at the expense of having like a good match between the two, but I don't mind it for episodic TV. So it leads right into a feud between Drew and Sammy and Jay while Rollins and Punk do their own thing. So those are our next programs.
Yeah. A lot of various interactions that we have coming out of this show, sort of up in the air with Punk and what you're going to be doing with him next. And
Rollins.
Yeah, but when? They've kind of set this stuff up. That is probably like a big enough match that you could do that at the Netflix premiere.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a potential one. I mean, they've been building it long enough. Like, I think that January 6th show will be loaded. And it doesn't really feel like the Saturday night's main event. Like, it's got a big attraction in Owens and Rhodes that has been built up. And the rest is sort of, it kind of just feels like a show to me so far. And we've only got we've got three shows before that special.
Oh, you could do something with the Bloodline, like with Roman. Roman solo is a possibility. Roman and Jacob.
We need some type of segment. The contract renewal of the Ulafala. The Ulafala gets a new color. What else could we do?
Something like that.
The reading of the will of the ancestors.
I think Daddy comes home and Rikishi finally shows up. Save that for Saturday night's main event.
Okay. Again, you're coming to Netflix. I mean, let's hold off on Rikishi for,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They can fill that show up with enough star power. We'll see how big of a priority this Saturday night's main event is for them. I would say
it should be like, this it's is, already this a is huge NBC prime time. Like I would want to build this up to be, you know, this isn't your biggest show. That's, you know, the Netflix thing is bigger, but
Compared to what a PLE offers, I would suggest that like this time slot on NBC should be a bigger deal than your average B-level pay-per-view at the very least. You know,
I agree.
And I would suggest that by now, this is already going to be the most relevant Saturday night's main event in decades, because the past ones have not been very relevant at all.
Yeah, it's ahead of Bret Hart and Papa Shango.
Is it? Not to me, but yeah.
So there you go. That was Raw. I thought there were a lot of like high points on the show. I really enjoyed the New Day segment. I liked like the the different outcome that it ended up being. And like the first 25 minutes, I thought was excellent. I just thought Zayn, Rollins, and Punk, all three of them were fantastic for those first 25 minutes. And I thought that for the lack of commercials, like I just thought all of a sudden, like that just breezed by. And I was glad that they had the leeway to just let them go out there for 20 plus minutes and just cut crepe promos on each other and callbacks to different storylines. It made sense by the end of it. Sans reunion, but mm-hmm. it's Tribal Chief Roman that is cast this shadow over all of these people.
Yeah, I thought in terms of like big stories, this was an episode that was full of it from top to bottom. Gave you a lot of, I think, satisfying material in the form of like, you know, follow up from War Games as well as building to new programs. You got a big return from Drew McIntyre here, a big return from Big E that led to significant change for the New Day going forward. So for all those reasons, I thought this was like a very like relevant, bigger feeling edition of Raw than usual.
All right, we got a bunch of feedback, so we are going to jump on to the forum. You can also
That's usually a good indication of like how much people cared about this show going.
Well, it sounds like it's heavily weighted towards the New Day. So let's dive into the forum.
Okay, let's go to John Cena, who says the New Day angle was one of the most captivating WWE segments I've seen in a long time. All day long, I had theories running through my mind at what might happen tonight during this, but this did not come across my mind whatsoever. Beautifully done. I was so curious about this that it caused me to watch Raw live for the first time in a very long time. It feels so odd watching Raw not in 2x speed. Question, if the end game was the same, how do you think Odyssey Jones would have fit into the story? Interesting. That's from John Cena, of course, the host of Collision Course with Kate from Montreal, or Collision Reviewer. They do a great job every single weekend. I think it would have led to... So if you remember, it was Kofi that was really into the idea of Odyssey Jones and Woods actually being the one that wasn't so into it. And that entire time, I was more sensing Kofi being the heel and Woods being like the guy, you know, thinking about their old friend Big E. Would we still have had the harsh, you know, Xavier Woods heel character if Odyssey Jones was still around? I wonder. But I think it would have ultimately led to Big E coming back anyway, you know, as the guy to answer for the fake Big E, right? And maybe Odyssey Jones would have been like the permanent replacement on a heel New Day.
It could have been Odyssey cutting the promo on Big E, and then when you think Woods and Kofi are going to finally stand up for Big E as he's going into all the like the next stuff, and instead they stand with this guy who they have chosen over Big E. I don't know if it would have gone so smoothly with Odyssey Jones the way it did in this incarnation, but we will never know.
We'll never know. Yeah, one of those what ifs.
Benjamin, I love, love, love the New Day anniversary segment, and the Punk, Rollins, Zayn, and Jey Uso segment was gold as well. The story built leveraging history and continuity to actually express character motivations and logic, something obvious in so many other mediums, but has been rare throughout WWE. It was so good, he adds.
It's very true. I mean, almost as wrestling fans, we're not really used to, you know, callbacks that aren't just really for the sake of callbacks, but callbacks that actually make sense for current character motivations. I thought in both like Rollins and Zayn's cases, it was done incredibly well. And let's not forget the New Day's, you know, Woods and Kofi's argument last week was very much the same as well. So, yeah, let's go to Brian in New Jersey, who says the big in-ring highlights of the episode were two stellar promo segments. The New Day segment was outstanding and surprising. Big E did a heck of a job uniting his two friends against him. And now I think we should expect Kofi and Woods are due for a major makeover. Likewise, Seth Rollins and Sami Zayn were fantastic together towards the start of the show, weaving in a lot of history, and it led to what I thought was a good main event, the best match on the show, and a surprising and welcome return from Drew. Sami and Rollins' his story tonight felt like the kind of story that could only be told within a tight 2-hour show like this. Nice to see Dakota Kai outside of a tag team match for the first time in forever. I have no guesses as to who wins both secondary women's titles.
Next is Andrew from Cape Breton. I definitely feel like I'm in the minority about the New Day segment. I thought it was fine in general, but something seemed off. One positive about WWE with their storytelling is their attempts to have heels justify their actions, whether it's Drew McIntyre, Kevin Owens, and even recently Xavier Woods trying to justify his more heelish tendencies. So when Xavier and Kofi started turning on Big E, it didn't make much sense. They're just bad guys now. What are they going to do next? Tie women to train tracks and kill Bambi's mother? They would know Big E's injury and why he wouldn't come back. Woods even said he'll never get cleared. And then them coming to together in their villainy seem to take away from the friction they've had for the past number of months. I understand it does set up a new direction for them, but this just seems odd for WWE to go from crafting justifications for their heels to having an act that had a lot of story built into it become cartoonish supervillains. At least Christian Cage was already a heel before he started mocking people's dead parents. But yes, the show was pretty notable. Punk might need to be made purposely angry next time he wants to get into a scrap with someone. Those shots didn't look the best. A generally great story progressing Raw tonight.
I think Andrew touching on maybe some of what we might have discussed about perhaps the sort of taunting from Kofi and Woods towards Big E being a little overboard to the point where it might feel like they're just kind of playing pro wrestlers. But at the same time, they're trying to get a big reaction from the audience, and maybe subtle wouldn't have achieved the same reaction. So,
and they're using the argument that, like, not like, why have you not come back wrestling, but just showing up, period, while we've been having all of these problems. And I mean, Big E is like, you're not going to have too many more sympathetic figures than Big E. And they used that for all it was worth tonight. And maybe it was too over the top, but at the end of it, you're designed to have this legitimate hatred of Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, which is really hard to do, even with the lead up to the segment over the past couple of months. And I think they got there, but we will see. Like, it's now is a very critical part of the transition to these new characters and how you change up the act and all these other things. Like, you, like you've laid the foundation for it, and now I'm very curious to see how they proceed.
They clearly did not want to leave any ambiguity about who you were supposed to boo and who you're supposed to feel sorry for, because maybe like being a little bit more realistic with the arguments would have led to people actually questioning where Big E was. Why didn't Big E show up this entire time? Now we might still question it, but we hate Kofi and Woods more for the way that they brought it up, right? So it's maybe in some ways less confusing that way.
Okay, here, this is how we do it, okay? Big E comes back and he says, I can't do it myself, but I've got somebody, and he's coming for you, Kofi, because Bill Goldberg is my favorite wrestler that I ever had growing up. And this meaty man has a retirement match next year, and Goldberg comes back and he beats Kofi Kingston in 6 seconds as Big E dances over a fallen Kofi Kingston.
I thought you were going to just suggest Brock. Why not?
Brock? That might have been an option before. I mean, Big E has more of the connection with Goldberg than he does Brock, but I understand the Brock.
Obvious. What's the Goldberg connection? Am I
big,
forgetting
meaty
something?
Men slapping meat. I mean, this was his favorite guy, Bill Goldberg.
Oh, has he said that in the past? It's his favorite wrestler?
I think it was one of them.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay.
Or you could bring back Brock. Like, let's see how that one goes.
Yeah. Well, there's a part of me that was thinking, is that Punk's favor that he's going to ask of Heyman?
To bring back Brock?
For a main event match at WrestleMania.
Well, then he's going to need a favor from the board of directors.
Right? Yeah, that's probably not happening. Jesus but I'm Christ. Just trying to like think what the favor is.
We're going to bring Paul back Heyman Brock, and we're going to put all of the heat on CM. It was CM Punk's decision. We did not okay this. He went into business for himself and brought back.
You know Brock. The audience will cheer it. Okay.
CM Punk told us it's okay.
All right, let's go to Manny from Pacoima, who says, a great addition of Raw. We got an extra 10 minutes commercial-free than what was advertised. The Punk and Rollins segment was great. The Balor attack on Gunther was done well. But that New Day segment, it's not a New Day. No, it's not. I found myself tearing up when Big E was on the mic. Then excited to hear Big E would be their manager, only to get my heart stomped on by Woods and Kofi. You broke your neck, so what? Dog, how good could they? Wait, imagine if John said, you stepped on a Lego, so what? Or what if John... Or John, what if Way said, you stubbed your typing figure, so what? Yeah, I don't know if...
Yeah, it sounds like an awesome segment.
Yeah, I don't know if either of those would get any reaction out of us. This segment was amazing, and what I thought would be a Kofi heel turn ended up being Woods and Kofi turning on Big E. Amazing episode overall, and the card for Saturday night's main event is looking good as well.
Jordan from the Bronx, the New Day segment was emotionally deep, nuanced, and rewarding. Those are not words that I'd use to describe WWE booking recently, but that segment was incredible. They've built this breakup angle for months, and at times felt like nothing was going to happen, but it kept building until that amazing promo last week. Add in Big E's Players Tribune article that came out today, and everyone's emotions were at a fever pitch. The Big E rally speech was brilliant, and I was actually excited for his managerial return, until Kofi and Woods dropped the hammer on it. I did not expect the lows that they went to in this, and I actually felt bad for watching this. We know that these emotions were very real and complicated to speak about in real life, and they used them brilliantly to encapsulate us all. New Day has went from being a seemingly washed up act to the most compelling thing in the company in a matter of months. I'm curious to see how soon Big E is able to come back, because this can only end with him returning, right? I think like they have set that out for people to have an expectation. It might be an unrealistic one, but I can see many people feeling that at the end of this.
I'm more curious to see who they're feuding with now. You know, who are Woods and Kofi United going to feud with now? Because what are the options, at least in the tag division, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be above a certain level. And it's not a deep tag division. Like, they could certainly, like, you could put the belts on them. But, yeah, that's a whole other crafting of a tag division to overtake.
And he says, I usually care more about the storylines on a weekly show, and this was one of my favorite episodes of wrestling TV all year. This show was a testament to focusing on continuity, carefully curating character arcs and overlapping them with flair. The mix of Sami, Rollins, Jey Uso, CM Punk, and Drew have well-defined interpersonal dynamics which spin off from the bloodline, and it couldn't be more compelling. So many permutations to explore. Eventually, you have to believe Kevin Owens will interact with some of these characters too, as it overlaps with his motivations. After reading Big E's Players Tribune piece, I was incredibly excited for the New Day. The segment had me at the edge of my seat. The story has been a nuanced, layered, and built very well. The loss of Big E left a massive void that sent Woods and Kofi's careers into a tailspin. A growing frustration at Big E's implied lack of support, moral or otherwise, felt entirely justified. This was an excellent subversion of my expectations, and one that has me irrationally hoping that we might see Big E wrestle again.
So a growing frustration at Big E's implied lack of support, moral or otherwise, felt entirely justified. Am I reading that right? That like they were justified in being upset at this guy who's dealing with a broken neck?
I guess so. I mean,
I thought the whole purpose of the seven is you're supposed to think like what assholes these two are for not understanding this. I think that's like the heat right there.
Maybe you could say it felt justified. Like you can understand why these assholes would think that if they had a very awful understanding of how neck injuries actually work, you know.
Luke from Quebec. Two incredible promo segments on Raw tonight. I thought the exchange between Sami and Seth was amazing. This is the greatest strength of this new WWE. They plant seeds for the future, but also remember and address decade-old stories and feuds that make all the current ones feel that much deeper. The characters are tweeners in the best way. They are nuanced, and you understand their motivations and perspectives. I'm glad they're reminding us that Roman has not changed, not apologized, and is still the same. There's more story to tell there. To me, the bloodline is way more interesting for how it affects the other wrestlers in the company than when it's just its own members feuding with each other. The New Day segment was a bit more on the nose, but I love how instead of going with the idea of Big E reconciling with the group or Kofi and Woods continuing to feud with each other, they went with a secret third option we weren't even thinking of, keeping the team going, but as hateful and selfish heels, the power of negativity. It was especially painful to watch after the incredible Players Tribune from Big E, which I hope you guys will discuss.
When we did, yeah, go back to the beginning of the show if you missed that. That's a great point about them addressing Roman's lack of apology to Jey Uso. You know, something that was set up on that first edition of SmackDown with Sami interacting with Roman, and they just didn't touch that at all. Sami just joined up with the War Games group, and everything proceeded as normal. So I was glad to see that they used that lack of resolution, you know, to further this Sami Zayn questioning the bloodline storyline. Let's go to Alex, who says, the New Day segment was peak WWE. Crazy that it's arguably not the best promo on the show either. I'm curious how they'll interact with Cena. The New Day with Cena, interesting. Okay. Well, will they interact with Cena?
I don't know. Maybe.
We'll see.
Cena will interact with everyone. All right, let's do one more here. Nas from New York. Just to add to the Big E written piece, I would highly recommend the New Day Feel the Power podcast episodes 1 and 2, where the three of them go into the formation of the group and how nonchalantly the three of them talk about how much harder they had to work just to be relevant to WWE creative. Incredibly powerful episodes. Highly recommended.
All right. There we go. Thank you for the recommendation.
Okay. Well, a lot of people had a lot of thoughts about tonight's edition of Raw, mainly on the New Day and the opening up series of promos. So there you have it. A lot of people very engaged with the big stories that are going on in WWE.
Yeah, yeah. One last word here. Happy birthday to Devin Clark, who celebrates a birthday tomorrow, probably actually in 15 minutes. So
happy birthday, Devin. Have a great day. And you know how you can have an even better day? That's by going to chop-tees.com/postwrestling as the Black Friday sale concludes this Wednesday. Pick up your own post-wrestling merchandise. Go to a wrestling show in style, whether it be a varsity jacket, t-shirt, toque, as we describe them up here in Canada, or a badass post-wrestling hat.
Or a long and winding Royal Road t-shirt, an MC Very Later popular. Hoodie, yep. or things from our friends at Poison Rana.
Take out your best friend with a post-wrestling hoodie.
Sure, or a post-wrestling pair of boxers. Okay, they're actually shorts, but I mean, how you choose to wear them is none of my business. Discounts on every single item here. More discounts if you buy two of them. So
All right.
That's the Boxing Day. Black Friday sale on right now at Chop Tees.
Don't worry, we'll have a Boxing Day one too, I'm sure. That's going to wrap it up. So Tuesday night, check out Up Next. And then Wednesday, we've got Pollock and Thurston at 1 Eastern, followed by Rewind to Dynamite Wednesday night. And head over to postwrestlingcafe.com as December is underway with plenty coming your way. Goodbye.
Need parts now? O'ReillyAuto.com offers in-store pickup, same-day home delivery, or next-day home shipping. Get more parts your way at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.